DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Christopher White, who is the Director of Education and Programs at the Center for Bioethics and Culture. He writes frequently on matters of public policy and social ethics and is a regular contributor to many print and online publications, including The Wall Street Journal, USA Today, National Review Online, Catholic World Report, Human Life Review, First Things, Public Discourse, and the National Catholic Register. With Christopher White, we go inside the pages of Renewal, how a new generation of faithful priests and bishops is revitalizing the Catholic Church, co-authored with Anne Hendershot and published by Encounter Books. Christopher, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You and co-author Anne Hendershot have written a phenomenal book, especially because it's so optimistic and it gives us a real sense of the true renewal that is occurring within the heart of the Church. And of course, that heartbeat really flows from that great sacrament of holy orders and therefore the priesthood.
You know, you're absolutely right. You know, priests are essential to the life of the Church, and sometimes we take that for granted. Priests are there, and we need them when we're born to baptize our children. They're there when we die to sort of pray us on to heaven. But they're essential to our daily lives and our functioning as Catholics. And the fact that the priesthood is growing is something that we should celebrate, and it's good news to be shared.
Talk to us, if you would, about those trends that you're seeing that can provide for us that optimism.
Sure. So if you look at the numbers supporting priestly ordination rates over the past 10 years, they tell a story that is not being told by the mainstream media, something you're not hearing on the nightly news or in most newspapers. And that story is this. The ordination rates to the priesthood are at a 20-year high. And in fact, in the decade following the sexual abuse crisis, in which critics of the Church have used the opportunity to kind of smear the reputation of the Church and to criticize its teaching on abortion and same-sex marriage and the celibate male priesthood, that's actually, you know, been a boon to the Church in a sense that it's forced the Church to actually delve into what the Church teaches and why, and to anchor its identity. And that's actually been attractive and has inspired young men to the priesthood. And in fact, since 2002, when the sexual abuse crisis really came to light, ever since then, we've had an uptick of ordination rates to the priesthood over the past 10 years. So we have a new generation of priests that are being attracted to what the Church, what I would call a sort of a robust defense of orthodoxy, and where the Church has really anchored itself in its identity and sort of made clear what the Church teaches, and that in turn has been a blessing.
Have you found, Christopher, that besides that struggle for a Catholic identity, there has been a real struggle for the priestly identity? What and who a priest is?
Sure. I mean, as I had kind of indicated earlier, I think sometimes we have a utilitarian approach to priests. Priests are just, you know, the guy in the collar that we call when we need some help, or that we go up to when we receive Mass, you know, when we go up to receive communion at Mass on Sunday. Mm-hmm. The priest is so much more. The priest is a representative of Christ, in persona Christi, the Latin term. And that's a great gift to us, that we have a representative of Christ in our midst, making the sacraments real for us on Sunday, making ordinary elements of bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ, reconciling us through the sacrament of confession with Christ, serving as the mediator, as Christ in that role, in our marriages, uniting people through the sacrament of marriage into one flesh. That's the priestly function as a representative of Christ is something that is actually something that is a deep theological gift and mystery that we should spend more time reflecting on in our own spiritual lives. And that, and when we do that, I think we then come to see the priesthood is not just a utilitarian function, something that we need. It's a gift to us.
Exactly. You know, as you were speaking, it really jumped out at me that it's that Christ-centered life of the church, and that I think it was Flannery O'Connor that said, it's not, we don't make the church holy, it's Christ in the center that makes it holy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so much of the renewal that has taken place in the church, you know, the crises that we've witnessed over the past, that has come to light over the past decade, they've been lapses of holiness. It's where we've lost sight of the Christocentrism, the fact that Christ should be at the center of our activities. When that has gotten lost, when that's been swept away, that's when we've had crises. So the sexual abuse crisis at the heart of it that caused such a sort of a spotlight to be turned on the priesthood was actually a lapse in holiness. And when we get holiness right, when we return to the roots of the priesthood, which is embracing its Christological nature, that's when we see, wow, this is something that this is special, and we should never lose sight of that.
I think sometimes, too, we forget that that's an extremely important paradigm. Because if we look, as you said, as the priest says, the utilitarian manager of the parish, and we're primarily speaking about diocesan priesthood here, aren't we?
Right. The subject of the book is primarily diocesan priests.
Right. So what happens if you are forming managers of parishes, and then that there's something gets lost? You first have to develop or to seek out that spiritual fatherhood that helps nurture a parish, not so much manage it. I think that's an important paradigm, don't you?
You're right in that, because you think about the first apostles. Who did Christ seek out? He sought out fishermen, people that could come alongside him and then take his message to others in a way that's successful and approachable. And so that sort of gift of a priest being approachable, someone that can nurture, can come along aside someone and really raise them up and inspire them, that's something that is an essential trait that all priests should have. And that's not to say priests shouldn't be trained in sort of the rudimentary sort of task of business management and sort of developing their business acumen for in order to efficiently run parishes and schools and things like that. That's really secondary to the priestly ministry. And so we can never lose sight of that.
It's so important when we talk about their formation that we look at the life of the seminary. Seminaries had, how they train them up, how they prepare them, makes a tremendous difference, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, John Henry Newman once wrote that, you know, there are two great sort of signs of Catholic unity, two great opportunities. It's in the episcopacy through the church's bishops, and then the seminaries. And in the seminaries, we've really seen over the past 10 years, in a sense, a self-examination, almost in some places even a cleaning house, where seminaries had lost sight of holiness, where theology had been replaced by psychology, where there was greater focus on sort of, as we talked about, the utilitarian function of the priest and not the priest's theological or philosophical foundation and training that's so essential, not to mention the spiritual life of the priest, which must be at the very center of a priest's formation. And so the seminaries that are producing the highest number of priests are the seminaries that get this right, that are rooting their training in holiness, and they're also being led by bishops that have made vocations a top priority for them as part of their diocese, and bishops that recognize that seminary, from the bishop on down to, you know, to the instructors and faculty, all the way down to the new priests, they have to all be of one mind and one heart, and that they all have to be headed in the same direction, and that's with the church, not against the church.
There is a tide that is moving against this one, that would want to diminish Catholic authority, particularly the authority in the clergy.
You're right. You know, what we've seen in the years past, since Vatican II, in the 70s and the 80s, is you know, there have been sort of two camps that have rivaled each other in the church, what I would call a more progressive camp mm-hmm. that has kind of rooted and anchored itself in demands for ordination of women, a removal of the celibacy requirement for priests, you know, allowing priests to get married, and kind of a flattening out of the church's hierarchical structure, opposition to hierarchy. And then we, at the same time, we have what I would say another camp. Some would call this a conservative camp or a traditionalist camp. I think that it's just a more of an orthodox camp, a church that is committed to the timeless teachings of the church, realizing that the reason the church has taught for centuries that it can only ordain men is because Christ made that decision in choosing priests. You know, people say that it's simply a patriarchal norm. In fact, at the time of Christ, there, you know, in many of the pagan religions, there was this idea of many priestesses, of women being priests, and the fact that Christ chose men to be priests in itself, that was a countercultural decision. So what we've got here is that there are these two rival factions, and I think it's safe to say that the debate has been won, in a sense. The seminaries that are producing new priests, they're the ones that are sort of anchored in the timeless teachings of the church. And in a sense, the progressive generations are fading. I would almost say they're out of the picture. And what we need to do is a better job of not so much focusing on the division, but now unifying the church, unifying its seminaries, unifying our formation of priests, so that we can all sort of assent to the church's teaching together in harmony.
You're talking about a real transformation, not just of positions, but of hearts. And in that transformation, there are leaders that are really coming to the fore, especially in the church in America, aren't there?
We have some great leaders in the church today. I mean, you know, being Catholic is just so exciting right now in America. Pope Francis is obviously in the news all the time, and people that have no interest in the church are starting to ask questions and follow the church. So it's an exciting time for the church to, in a sense, put its best face forward, and we should be grateful that we have leaders that can live up to that task. I live here in New York, where we have the great Cardinal Dolan as Archbishop here of New York, and he's on television all the time, whether it be, you know, Meet the Press, to the Today Show, to our local Catholic media here, and he's putting, you know, he's got a winsome personality, a charisma that's contagious, where even sort of New York's most antagonistic figures that are so hostile toward Catholicism, they want to understand what gives him his joy, or he can shake, you know, the hand of anyone around him, but do so with a smile and defend the church's teaching while he's at it. So we have very capable leaders like Cardinal Dolan. I think of the great Cardinal George out in Chicago, who's been the longtime leader there, Archbishop Chacou in Philadelphia, formerly in Denver, and a whole plethora of names. You know, I could go on and on for a full hour of just sort of profiling these wonderful bishops that we have, not to mention just other priests such as Father Robert Barron, who is now head of the seminary in Chicago, but better known for his work of the Catholicism documentary series produced by Word on Fire Ministries. So we have great leaders, great public figures that we can point to as representatives of our faith. And in an era where news media and via the internet, through television, is just so vital to our communication, we need these figures that are out there on the front lines defending the faith.
Oh, I have to just lift up too, here in the heartland, right in the heart of the country, we have some wonderful bishops like Archbishop George Lucas, Bishop Conley.
Bishop Conley.
Oh yeah, Bishop Denninger in Grand Island, Archbishop Aquila in Denver. I mean, so many that are hands-on and really have always, quite frankly, having known some of the men before Pope Francis, knowing them, they were, as he said so beautifully, what was a few months ago, Pope Francis, that the bishops should smell like their sheep, that image of the good shepherd. And I have a sense of it that there are so many that are indeed striving for that.
They're living the faith out sort of on the ground with their sheep, as you mentioned. And it's a beautiful image. And the fact that we have so many bishops now, as you just mentioned, Bishop Aquila, Bishop Connolly, that are, they're representative of, I think, a larger, sort of more widespread trend of these young bishops that are, you know, very early on in their sort of priestly careers, if you want to say, that are just... they're rattling people's perceptions of the church, of Catholic leadership, in a very good way. And it's making people to kind of pause and think, what is it about these men? That, why do they possess such joy? Why are they so attractive in their presentation of the gospel? And that, I think, is a trend that's going to continue over a very long time and should be cause for celebration, really.
Yeah, I mean, there is no doubt, and you document very well in the book, the decline in ordinations in the 1970s, and it happened right after Vatican II. But yet, because there has been this growth, much of that is because the foundations have been shored up, the soil, as it were, has been richly augmented by the fullness of teaching, the teachings of Blessed John Paul II, and, of course, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, that have laid, as I said, the foundation to be able to have this time where it's flourishing.
Yes, you know, so much of the priest, so much of the papacies of both John Paul II and Benedict XVI was very much a process and a project of giving a definitive interpretation of Vatican II and sort of a proper understanding. And so they spent so much of their time and so much of their energy sort of rendering that accessible to us in a way that we're just now being able to really fully integrate into our seminaries, into our dioceses. One of the messages of our book is that we're just now beginning to reap the early fruits of that, and there's going to be a real harvest to come.
I think that is just so incredibly essential, but there's still many challenges to those who are responding to the call to the priesthood, and also for those who need to have the transformation of heart to encourage and nurture those vocations.
Right. I mean, one of the things that we highlight in our book really is the battle for Catholic identity in Catholic higher education. Which in many respects should be a real channel, a real funnel for young men to consider the priesthood and for young women to consider religious life. Catholic higher education is absolutely essential in passing on sort of the continuity of the faith from, you know, the family through one's sort of education. And what we've really lost sight of in the past few decades is that a Catholic institution is no mere just educational institution in which the faith is secondary. A Catholic institution is Catholic because once the faith is at the very heart, and everything that the university or college does should emanate from that. And what my colleague Ann Hendershot has termed status envy, where you have Catholic colleges and universities that simply want to compete with their secular counterparts, that's been taking place for several decades now, and as a result, we've kind of blurred the lines of what it actually means to be an institution of Catholic learning, and in a sense, I think that's been a real detriment to the priestly ministries, where, you know, for a long time we relied on these places to actually attract young men to the priesthood, and so, you know, we're beginning to get the conversation right in some of these places. You've got great places like Franciscan University in Ohio, which is just sort of a hub of future vocations to the priesthood and religious life, places like Ave Maria, Christendom College, and a number of institutions that have offered us a model of what works. Yes, there are challenges, but there are also we have signs of hope.
What do you see in the conversations that you've had and the studies that you've done that help us to appreciate the role of celibacy and its embrace by those who are coming into the priesthood?
You know, priestly celibacy is perhaps one of the most misunderstood teachings of the church today. Most people just don't see the point. They see it as an antiquated teaching, and almost sort of an impossible feat. But those that sort of offer that line of criticism often forget that Christ himself was celibate, that Christ lived 33 years on earth, never once knowing sexual pleasure. So this sort of impossible standard that they see is one that Christ actually modeled for us, so we have a great example of that. But moreover, you know, two major sort of psychological studies were done over the past decade surveying the level of job satisfaction and happiness in the priesthood by Father Thomas Rossetti. And over 80% of priests today say that celibacy has been a grace in their ministry and essential to them being able to execute their job as priests. So we shouldn't underestimate the value of that. And it doesn't detract from happiness. In that same study, we found that over 90% of priests are consider themselves happy and joyful in their vocation, that they would do it all over again. And you compare that to job satisfaction rates of the rest of the country for your average American, which hover around 40 to 45%. And you have to realize this thing called celibacy that most people are critical of seems to be a real gift and a blessing to those priests because it allows them to concentrate fully on their priestly ministry, to live out their sacrifice in a way that's visible to the rest of the world and in a way that serves as a blessing to their sheep.
You know, in the last few moments, we've been speaking of it as a job, as a career, and yet we really don't want to lose that heart of the paradigm that it's about responding to what has been placed in the heart of the person and allowing that to nurture that and to give that the chance to live out that service, that vocation.
You're right, and I think you nailed it in the last word there, vocation. The priesthood is not a job, it's a calling, it's a way of life, it is a vocation. So at the heart of the priestly ministry is this call by Christ, called by name, as the scriptures say, set apart for this ministry. And if you are called to be a priest, you're going to be given the grace to accept what some may see as the harder teachings, such as celibacy. So it's not simply something one has to forego as a job sacrifice, but you're given a grace in order to live that out. And so that's something that we can't lose sight of either.
Christopher, I wish we had more time. I think it's an absolutely fantastic book. I couldn't put it down, and it left me with so much hope and optimism. I wonder if you have any final thoughts for today.
Well, you know, as I kind of hinted at earlier, the church has a unique opportunity for ministry right now, for getting the message right. You know, some might criticize the stories in Rolling Stone and Time Magazine regarding Pope Francis for not getting the story right, and that's true. But regardless of if the story is right, the church is in the news. It's a topic of conversation. I think of my non-Catholic neighbors and friends here in New York, and they have questions. And so let's consider this, you know, priests and lay people alike, a real opportunity to take an opportunity for evangelization, an opportunity for missions, and an opportunity to really witness and live out the church's call to call others into friendship with Christ and to live it out in our own life. And while the church is so much the focus of the news story and in stories and in general conversation, let's, as Catholics, live up to that and get the story straight and live it out in our own lives.
Well said, Christopher. Christopher White, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
With Christopher White, we've gone inside the pages of Renewal, how a new generation of faithful priests and bishops is revitalizing the Catholic Church, co-authored with Ann Hendershot. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to EncounterBooks.com, the website for its publisher, Encounter Books, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.